All right, real quick, I just put up a poll. This dovetails off of a conversation Seth and I were having earlier. I framed it this way, Seth. I'm curious who you think is going to win this poll. Nobody's voted yet. I put it up 18 seconds ago. Pender poll. Pretend the Marconi Award for Station of the Year will be decided by which of the five Marconi station finalists has an on-air talent run the fastest mile. Who should represent Sports Radio 610? Seth Payne, Reggie Atatula, Clint Sterner, or Sean Bajani? I picked one from each show.
Okay. Right? I think that...
You got the first vote. One vote in, they voted for Seth Payne. Yeah.
This will be tricky because I think there's probably people who listen to the station who they might not know Bajani as well just because they don't listen at night.
Yeah.
And if they're not older, they know they don't remember Bajani from back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
I feel far and away Bajani would be the guy.
Yeah.
But I think Reginald, by virtue of his, he's just kind of, he's got a svelte physique.
Yeah.
I think Bajani.
I think he wins the poll.
Bajani will win the poll.
I mean, I think Bajani would be the choice, but you think he'll...
I think he'll be the choice, but also I think because also people are reminded that when I brought up the tale of the tape when Bajani thought he was going to be able to beat me in a boxing match,
right?
People realize like, okay, this is... Unless Bajani's actually a former Golden Gloves winner or something, probably doesn't have much of a chance versus old Sethers. But likewise, Bajani would dust my ass in a mile. I feel confident in that.
All right, let's get to the petty cast here. Text in your petties, 713-572-4610, if you've got anything you're feeling petty about. Let's start here. We previewed this one yesterday. This is Jerry Jones doing an interview with Stephen A. Smith, making one of the strangest analogies I've ever heard, but then at the very end, petty once again towards David Mulligetta.
In the spirit of not doing the old mother-dad deal, how many times have you seen the little rascal so clever go in there and mama told him, uh-oh, you're not going to get it. And goes in to daddy who only sees him after 5 in the afternoon, wants to love him, and says, you can have it, son. You can have that before dinner. And he goes back in and says, mama, daddy said I could have it. That's the old mom, dad. Been around since the beginning of time. I'm not going to go for that shit here. That's what's happening.
You're not going for it.
I'm not going for it. No. But we've had a very, very strong negotiation. Now, by the way, frankly, it wouldn't have made any difference what the negotiation was. Guess who has to be comfortable for this to work?
Micah.
And who else?
You.
Hello. There's not room for a third. There's not room for a third. This will be a good one.
It's not. I mean, it will be good for by his standards because he wants as much publicity as possible. Yeah. It's an idiotic analogy there because he's painting Mike out as the child, which is how he's been treating him in a lot of this, and that he's the dad let's say Jerry's the mom and Mulligetta's the dad. And because that's what it is. Usually it's the mom that's saying no. It's the dad that's... At least in our family, it's a dad who caves on stuff. Ah, it's a popularity contest. Give the kid what he wants.
Yeah.
I got crap to do. So this is the whole problem is that like Jerry Jones is openly and brazenly flouting the rules of the collective bargaining agreement. If a player has an agent, you're not allowed to cut the agent out of the process. So every time he gets up and says, well, Micah and I had a deal, and then Micah says, no, hold on a second. No, I've got an agent. You got to talk to the agent. And Jerry's just flat out saying, nope, you're not. It's like saying that somebody's been arrested can't talk to their attorney. Like, there's very specific rules that the guy's allowed to have an attorney. Likewise in the NFL. Very specific rules that the player's agent is there for a reason, and that you need to go through him if that's who the player is directing you to. And I just, this is where I feel like he's also brazenly, it's not Mulligetta that he's flipping the bird to. He's flipping the bird at the NFLPA.
No doubt.
Because this is weak right now.
Yep.
I mean, the fact that he just will openly say, nope, I'm not going to follow the rules of the collective bargaining agreement. I'm just going to do whatever I want. Yeah, it's nope. Agent doesn't matter at all. Agent doesn't count. And then the other part of it too, that's just false is like, no, anybody involved. Now the agent works for the player. So at any point the player can say, no, Mulligetta, you're wrong. Do this or you're fired. It's Micah Parsons and Jerry Jones are the two guys who genuinely have the ability to say no.
Yep.
Like it's like, and he knows that,
yeah.
But he's playing the big man. He's thumping his chest. And the hilarious thing is that he always caves at the end anyway.
Yeah.
So he's going to end up giving a boatload of money to Micah Parsons. He's getting a good, he's making a good show out of it.
Clock's ticking because they play on Thursday night. They play in the opener against the Eagles. So we'll see what happens there. So Jerry, petty towards Mulugeta, and I think the world at large, petty towards Jerry, like just flouting the rules of negotiation. All right, this was on our sister station, this next cut, WFAN. Boomer Esiason and Greg Giannotti, Boomer and Gio is the name of their show on WFAN. They do mornings up there. Boomer Esiason, of course, a Cincinnati Bengal great. He's in their Ring of Honor. They're doing their Ring of Honor induction this season, sometime midway through the season. They play the Jets. Whatever game they play the Jets, that's when they're doing their Ring of Honor induction. And they like to bring all the current Ring of Honor people back for that to attend it. As it turns out, much to Boomer's chagrin, they make you pay for your own hotel room. This is Boomer reading the correspondence from the Bengals PR staff to him.
If you are traveling in for the weekend from out of town, we have secured a block of rooms at the Resonance Cincinnati Downtown Hotel.
Hold on.
What? Renaissance.
A block of rooms. Usually when people say a block of rooms, it's like a wedding thing and you have to go on there and say, I'm part of this party.
Yeah, but this is why they sent it. So the Renaissance Cincinnati Downtown Hotel at a preferred discounted rate.
Hold on.
So I can book my group rate for the Ring of Honor weekend. Rooms are limited, so please book directly for early and the best rate. We'll look forward to hosting you in the jungle for an unforgettable weekend. Don't hesitate to reach out to me or another guy on the staff with any questions. Thank you and Houday.
Houday?
Houday.
Who they think they are making you pay for your own hotel room? That's what I would say.
You think I'm an elitist if I say no to that?
I don't. Boomer, I don't think you're an elitist. Clearly, if they were to pay for his hotel room, it seems like, Seth, he would show up. Like, that seems to be the tipping point for Boomer Esiason. Is I got to pay my own travel expenses here.
I don't know. For him, I think it's more that he probably feels like he's sticking up for a lot of the other guys who aren't in it. Like, Boomer's in a pretty good position financially.
True.
You know, like, he didn't play back when the money was so huge, but he's got a drive time job in New York. So Boomer's doing all right. He can afford it.
I think
it's more that he's thinking about all these other guys that all have to, you know, pay for their own dime to come back and do this.
Maybe it is the petty cast though, so I choose to believe he's being petty in all this.
I think he's being petty towards, I think this might be the last straw to where he's just sick of dealing with the Bengals BS all these years.
The Bengals gotta be one of those teams if you get drafted by him, like, okay, I'm getting my shot in the NFL. I'm talking more like the highly drafted guys. I think once you get to day three, guys are just happy to be on a team.
Yeah.
But watching the Trey Hendrickson stuff and all the stories that come out about the Bengals, like, they just ratchet organization, man. All right, let's get to this one because this is one we've not played yet. Back when the when the lawsuits were coming out within Fox about one of the higher-ups there, and as part of the lawsuit, this wasn't part of the issue in the lawsuit, but it was an anecdote that was included in the lawsuit that became public, was that reportedly and allegedly Joy Taylor, a former host at FS1, had an inappropriate relationship, we'll say, with one of the higher-ups there. Again, it's alleged in a lawsuit, so we want to point that out. But Jason Whitlock, who used to be with Fox back in the day, told an anecdote, not a big Joy Taylor fan, told an anecdote about when he was at Fox, they tried to pair him up with Joy Taylor, and this is how it went.
At this time, this is 10 years ago, Joy Taylor's probably 25, 26 years old. You're talking about, I mean, I got a lot of discipline, but 25-year-old with them big cans and that peanut butter skin who has nothing to say, at some point I'm going to lose respect. And I'm like, well, the only thing she's got to offer is them big cans and that peanut butter skin. And so if I got to put up with this, I might as well enjoy them big cans. And so I said, no. I don't want to put myself in that position.
Okay, so he's talking like, I wouldn't be able to help myself, as if Joy Taylor would be way into Jason Whitlock.
I know that's the...
I mean, I'm not George Clooney or anything like that, but like...
It's pretty obvious we would both succumb to temptation.
Yeah, okay.
And she would be so...
So Joy Taylor, who is an independent right now, she's not with anybody. She's not with Fox anymore. She's working on whatever the next chapter is going to be.
I didn't know. So at first, the peanut butter skin comment caught me because when I first saw the headline, I'm like, wait, is that an insult or is that a compliment? And then also, okay, I don't know if this, I don't, whether it's actual, like the tone of the skin or whatever. I don't want to delve into any kind of that. But I think it's the smoothness of the skin.
I guess.
That annoys me because that tells me that Jason Whitlock is a creamy peanut butter guy. And like, because obviously crunchy peanut butter would be an insult.
Oh, she'd have all kinds of blemishes on her face.
Skin.
Yeah.
I go to the grocery store and I'm consistently disgusted that there are, I would say by 5 to 1, the ratio of smooth peanut butter to crunchy peanut butter. Sometimes I can't even find a good crunchy peanut butter.
You know, I'm a crunchy
guy. What's wrong with people?
Yeah.
What the hell is wrong with people that they prefer creamy to smooth?
Okay, let's get to Joy Taylor here. Joy Taylor.
I'm being petty here, Sean.
I know you are. I can tell. I love crunchy. You know that. I bought a big jar of crunchy when you and I were in West Virginia.
Yeah.
Here's Joy Taylor on with Cam Newton on his podcast. And Cam Newton asked about Jason Whitlock.
Every time someone brings up Jason Whitlock, I can't believe he's still with us. I don't think anything works harder than his cholesterol, if I'm being honest.
Mm. When he said that rack.
He said cans.
Okay, so before you go on, I've never watched this, okay? I'm only aware of this from adjacent conversation. I did not watch a single second of this. I couldn't give a f*** less. And I have not consumed any of it.
Well, I'm going to give you the...
He said something about peanut butter, right?
Yeah, that peanut butter...
What a
butter,
shock. Food.
Yeah. Peanut butter skin.
Okay.
And when I was working with her...
Yeah.
We would always see her rack, and I wanted to stay away from her because I knew what I would have done.
Well, I mean, he's so desirable.
Yeah. But we love Jason.
No, we do. I do not. No, we don't. Who loves Jason? Does God love Jason?
Yeah, I do.
I do not. I do not love Jason.
Okay. So two, by my count, two fat jokes, cholesterol and, big shock food. Do you believe that she's never watched that clip that we played?
I think she probably, honestly, women in sports media, I think, have to get really good at ignoring a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
They get a lot of crap that's just. It's ridiculous. So, and I'm not sitting here trying to be, a simp or whatever it is. It just flat out is. Look at the comments. A woman can't post anything on social media about sports without 90% of the comments being like, you don't know, you're just a dame. So, I do believe that she might not have heard that comment. She probably is, Though she did have those two at the ready. Who was the co-host there? Who was she on with?
Cam Newton.
That was Cam Newton. Okay.
Cam Newton. Yeah.
I think that Cam could have made it funnier, but I think Cam was, Cam didn't want to jump into the fray. I think as much.
Yeah.
Sounds like he has some kind of relationship with Jason Whitlock.
Perhaps. Yeah. Yeah. There was another minute or so in this thing that was less interesting as it went on because Cam Newton would not engage in the blasting of Jason Whitlock.
If Cam had joined in, then it could have been really, really funny. But she had a couple of really good lines, but they just kind of sat there and it ended up being dead.
Yeah.
But good. I would give her an A+ on the pettiness.
Yeah.
Whitlock was like, all right, that's out of bounds, man. But Whitlock is Whitlock.
Multiple texts coming in, Seth, saying peanut butter is the color of her skin is what
the color, okay,
referred
see,
to. Yeah.
Which is exactly why I wanted to stay away from it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to comment at all on any of that, obviously.
Right, right, right.
But as far as smooth peanut butter... In general, being by far inferior to crunchy peanut butter, I will stand by that.
This is your soapbox. I'm with you on that.
Try to make that racial. I'm sure somebody out there is. But no, Chris.
Do not dare the internet to make that racial. They will. Yeah. Is there a group of people that love crunchy peanut butter more than smooth peanut butter?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So Notre Dame opens the football season by playing the University of Miami. And we know that there's a long history with these two schools that they made a documentary about it, a 30 for 30, called Catholics versus Convicts. This is a quick one here. Lou Holtz did a sit-down interview with somebody over the last couple of days, and they asked him about his issue. They talked about Catholics versus convicts, Notre Dame versus Miami back in 1988. And he had this. This is his issue with the labeling of Catholics versus convicts.
Miami was a rivalry. Catholics versus convicts. And I did like that. And I said, that's unfair. Because not all our team was Catholic.
Get bent, old man.
Oh, Ben! Ben, Miami Hurricane tells Lou Holtz to get bent. I can promise you there is a ton of pettiness in that right there. I can tell you firsthand almost that there is a ton of pettiness. That was good.
Didn't you know the guy that made the first Catholics versus convicts t-shirt?
I did. The guy I did. Yeah, one of them was a basketball player. One of my roommates was the captain of the basketball team, and he was teammates with one of the guys who made the T-shirts back in the day. Those were very popular T-shirts, man. Very popular. All right, let's play this. We got a little bit of time. Let's skip down to Vrabel here, Ben. We'll close the Pettycast out with a little Mike Vrabel action. This is Vrabel. Jalen Polk is a second-year receiver for the Patriots who, it turns out, is going to miss the season. That news made it out there earlier than Mike Vrabel anticipated it making out there. Here was Vrabel getting asked in a press conference about the Jalen Polk news.
Mike, there was a report today that Jalen Polk will have to have season-ending shoulder surgery. Can you add anything to that?
No.
I know you
said. I don't know, other than I'd like to find out where some of these come from. You know, some of these rats around here, so we'll figure that out.
I mean, someone's getting whacked. Vrabel's going to kill somebody.
It could be. He's got to be careful with this because it could just be Jalen Polk's agent.
It could be.
That did that, or a family member or something. You never know.
In his eyes, a rat.
Yeah. That's good. This is some good old school. This is some Bill Parcells tree drama here. Vrabel, we've had arguments about this, whether or not Vrabel is on the Belichick tree, which would make him on the Parcells tree. Mm-hmm. I feel like he spent enough time in that organization, even though he didn't coach for one of those guys, that he's in the tree.
Yeah.
But you know what? He worked underneath Bill O'Brien, so that puts him officially
on the Sopranos, he's like Hesh. You know, like, remember Hesh? He wasn't really a mob soldier, but he was an associate of the Sopranos.
Yeah.
Vrabel's an associate of the Belichick coaching tree.
And I think he's got a little bit of that mindset where it's still very old school of like, man, no, like zero leaks tolerated, and they'll find out. They'll go over phone records and whatnot to figure out if there's a rat in the organization. I like it.
I do too. I do too. It's gonna be okay. Text message. I had to stop watching the YouTube stream because I didn't want to get tempted by Sean's mayonnaise skin. All right. That was a low blow, man.
They're going to do a behind the sports radio episode 20 years from now, and it's going to be me smoking a cigar and be like, I'll tell you what, there were many a day where I just wondered if God was testing me as Sean Pendergast sat across from me with his light mayo skin.
With those big cans and his mayo skin. His big
wearing those athletic
cans.
Shorts. Yep. Just legs spread just far enough apart.
They are. Actually, that's how I sit. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you.
Sitting there, I never, you know, for me, my grandma never wanted me to date a Catholic, and I always wondered why.
Mayonnaise.
And sitting there across from Sean every day, I could see the temptation of the devil was upon me.
Okay, it's getting uncomfortable. Mayonnaise skin. To quote the great Ben Gary, get bent, Texter, all right?
What I wouldn't do to wrap some rosary beads around that thick neck of his.
Turn his mic off. All right.
Let me tell you a story about David Carradine.
All right, we're going to carry the pettiness over into the next segment. Adam Schefter.
Yeah, we got to get to break right quick here, Sean.
Hey, mayo face.
Get to quick ASAP.
Adam
that
Schefter.
That means as Sean as possible.
Adam Schefter is petty about the Texans and the information that he is not getting about what is the biggest news story of the day with the Houston Texans. We'll tell you what that is coming up next. All right, a text message. As I sift through all these Seth is insane texts and try to find one related to the topic at hand.
What the hell's that all about?
I think it's a compliment. It's a compliment. Right. You made a lot of people laugh at that previous segment. Would y'all rather have Mixon miss four games in the beginning of the season or at the end of the season? That's an easy one. Beginning.
I feel like that's that feels like an argument of some sort. Yeah. Like, yeah, I don't know. It's either. It's not as simple as an either or.
Right. The rest of the text. I feel the Texans are just being extra cautious, wanting him to be healthy down the stretch. It's cool to feel that way. Nobody knows anything right now.
Right. Yeah. No, I don't fault them for being cautious. It's not like I'm not faulting the Texans for anything. They're just right. We don't know exactly what's going on. Certainly.
I don't think the texter's getting chippy or anything.
But it's still even addressing something that's not even actually a concern. Right. Like, I'm not. If caution is what's merited right now, then by all means, yes, sure. I'd rather have him now. I feel like he's answering a question that it feels like a rhetorical question because obviously the answer is yes.
Yeah.
So if you don't ask a rhetorical question like that and expect me to just accept it at face value.
Okay.
All right.
So my point with reading that text is the texter saying, this is what I feel the Texans are doing.
Yeah.
That's cool. There's nothing to base that on right now. The team has been very tight-lipped about what exactly is going on with Joe Mixon. The most speculation we've seen is with doctors talking about PRP injections and what that might mean. Like, it's... We're all over the map right now, and you know who's very frustrated about this?
Who?
Adam Schefter.
Nobody knows, well, there are people that know, but nobody's saying what exactly happened. There is a question as to when or if Joe Mixon's going to play again this season. I can raise that question because nobody yet has answered it. Nobody's been willing to answer it. But there's been a lot of mystery about exactly what's wrong with him. The Texans had him lined up to appear at a football camp the first day. He didn't show up. He obviously hurt his ankle away from football. We don't know how or what that was. He hasn't been seen from all summer. Nobody's willing to say anything. They've been very, very tight-lipped about this. And I'll say it again. I think there's a question as to when and if he will play again this season. And if somebody wants to correct me and point out why, please let me know why that's wrong.
If there's nothing wrong, then it's pretty easy to just squash that bug immediately. And
nobody's told me he's fine. Nobody. Not one person.
Okay, so Schefter's basically just daring the Texans to correct a speculation that he's putting out there. That when he says if Joe Mixon plays, the obvious implication there is that there's a chance he might not play this season.
This is where the difference between, I think, how football teams operate and how baseball teams operate comes in. I think in baseball and with the Astros, there's a frustration when you don't get information about somebody like Kyle Tucker or Yordan or whomever else it might be, partly because there have been either missed or like missed diagnoses or misdiagnoses, whatever, like not catching a break on an x-ray or whatever it might be with the Astros. But then also the gamesmanship isn't as big a part of it in baseball as it is in football. Like football, there's only 17 games and the running back is so important, et cetera, et cetera, that you just... There's something that the Texans could be playing it close to the vest simply because they don't want the Ravens, by the way, to know exactly what's going on with Joe Mixon. It would be really nice from the Texans' perspective if come week 5 of the regular season, they don't have a clue and they don't have a report about what's going on with Mixon, then so be it. So I don't fault the Texans for not putting information out there. I think likewise with Christian Harris was a little bit of a different situation because that like the gamesmanship doesn't apply as much there and it dragged on for so long. I think that it is frustrating though when you just flat out have no idea whether this is something that they think is no big deal, but it just needs a little extra time, or is it something that is very much and seriously threatening his entire season?
Yeah, and the reason Seth's bringing up the Ravens in week 5, Joe Mixon, for those who don't know, being on the NFI, the non-football injury reserve list going into the season means you've got to miss the first 4 games. Mandatory, he's got to miss the first 4 games. The first time Joe Mixon could get on the field would be week 5 in Baltimore, the week before the bye week for the Texans, which gets interesting because then the bye week being the week after the Ravens, you know, if it is an injury he could come back from, I could see them just shutting him down for the first 5 weeks because you almost get an extra week because of that bye week in week 6. I'm probably way ahead of myself. We don't know if this is a season-ending thing or if it's just them being super cautious and saying, look, Joe, rest those first 4 weeks. he might be ready to go or close to it, but they want to just take it easy. And I wonder too, Seth, if their ability to run the football in the preseason, granted in very sparse glimpses of it against other teams' ones and probably against some vanilla defenses, but I would say they ran the ball pretty well during the preseason, yeah. But certainly by the standards we expected. I wonder if that factors in at all, like if Mixon, if they needed him to come back, that he could have come back, but they feel they can get through the first 4 weeks with a backfield of Nick Chubb, Woody Marks, and Damian Pierce running behind this offensive line.
Yeah, that's do they feel like they can practice the utmost caution at this point because they feel like it's going to be better?
They feel okay.
And That's an interesting dynamic there. I don't think they did that much in the preseason that you can feel like, oh yeah, we're 100% okay. I'm optimistic. I'm more optimistic right now about Nick Chubb than I was before, but I still have questions.
Sure.
And same with Damian Pierce. Woody Marks, I'm really excited about, but he's a rookie. So, and the offensive line, I feel like they'll be better this year, but I still don't know what their ceiling is or just how good they could be.
Yep.
So everything right now and the lack of information and everything else just makes me – maybe I'm just naturally pessimistic in this regard. I'm not – right this moment, I'm not optimistic that we see Joe Mixon in week 5.
Yeah.
But it's not – that's not an informed opinion of mine. That's just my feel for the matter.
As best you can read the tea leaves right now.
Yeah.
You know. Now, Schefter did have a report earlier this morning about the Texans, and he said this, a name to watch today, Texans left tackle Cam Robinson – who the team has discussed trading per sources. Rookie Ariante Ursary has impressed this summer and looks ready to man the Houston Texans left tackle position. That I could see. And if they're going to trade Cam Robinson for purposes of kind of, you know, alleviating a logjam with the roster, it's got to happen in the next 7 hours. Because 3 o'clock today is the deadline to get down to 53. What would be an acceptable trade for Cam Robinson? Mid-round
probably.
Pick?
Yeah, mid-round pick of some sort.
Fourth or a fifth, something like that?
Yeah, and I mean, it wasn't like he was one of the more highly sought-after offensive tackles in the league. I can't think of any – the Chargers. Chargers lost
Slater, yeah.
Slater.
Rashawn Slater, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's the one notable thing that pops into my mind because that's where you get the most. And it might be one of those things where they might have had a chat with Cam and said, hey, you know, we'll float this out there and – maybe sometime between now and the trade deadline, something comes of it. But be a good soldier and let's just keep going on. But yeah, if the opportunity isn't there, we'll give you an opportunity somewhere else.
He's set to make $12 million. Cam Robinson is. I could see the scenario where they trade him for a pick, and they've got to pick up some of the tab on the $12 million the Texans do. And so in essence, you know, they got to pay $3 million of it, and in essence, they're kind of buying a fifth round pick, that sort of thing.
Yeah. You know what, the other Cam that's out there is Cam Akers, because Cam Akers was released by the Saints, and I saw some people mention that, hey, maybe the Texans will do that. I'd be surprised just because of this very specific reason. One of the reasons that Cam Akers wasn't really a fit in Los Angeles anymore was because they transitioned from being an outside zone run-based team to more of a gap scheme, and Cam Akers doesn't fit that scheme as well. And that's exactly what the Texans have done this year with an offensive coordinator who came from the Rams. That I don't think they probably look at Cam as good a fit for what Nick Caley is doing than what it was with Bobby Slowick.
Yeah, he was released by the Saints yesterday, I think it was, right? Cam Akers? Yeah. I think he was on the Saints. So, yeah he's out there. the texter who you got a little sideways with says, I'll ask all the rhetorical questions, Seth. That's funny. Brent in the Heights points out Falcons dealing with injuries at tackle as well. There's some teams that are in need of a tackle like Cam Robinson. Cam Robinson would be a suitable replacement or a suitable solution for some of these teams right now.
Yeah, and Cam's an interesting one because he's been, he's been an average level starter. He's had his best games against the Texans historically, which annoys me. So I feel like I had to fight against my own bias a little bit because he's actually had some good games against the Texans, but those aren't. He's been an average offensive tackle, which is a valuable commodity, especially when you've got injuries. Yeah. But he gets traded to Minnesota last year, and that wasn't – I don't think it was a great fit for him. So he ended up having maybe some of the worst film he's had as he's entering free agency. the questions will be, I think there's other teams out there that probably look at him the same way the Texans did, which is, yeah, like if we need him to be our stopgap or if we need him to start for us, we could certainly do worse. It's just what's like, how much of the salary are you willing to pay, Houston Texans? And that's where some of the fun little negotiations get into it.
Figgy had this in the mixtape, I think last week, and I wanted to address this with Seth. He had a list of the craziest college courses at all the FBS schools in the state of Texas. Which of these would you be most likely to take as a course? We'll hear from Will Anderson at the top of the hour. He was on the Greenlight podcast. We'll do all of that as we roll on here on a Tuesday on Payne and Pendergast. A quick reminder, too, our first college football watch party is this Saturday at Boomer Jackson. Katie, that's 1110 Grand West Boulevard. Party starts at 11. The doors are opening early, though, 10:30 a.m. I asked the manager when I was out there last Friday. The doors open at 10:30. Watch the games. Have some ice-cold flight by Yingling. We've got a $4 draft special going on. And root for your favorite team. We'll have some great prizes that we're giving away from Yingling as well. That's Boomer Jackson Katie on Saturday. Doors open at 10:30 a.m. Dude, if I had known my life would play out the way it did after college, I never would have been a finance major. Ever. I got into sales.
Really?
I never would have been. No, because I didn't like it. It was one of those things.
Yeah.
It was one of those things like, you know, I grew up in a town where, you know, the kids all had to aspire to be some Wall Street thing or, you know, yeah. It was an affluent suburb and you had to, you know, boy, you had to go be a stock guy or whatever. And so I ended up spending 4 years studying something I didn't like and I didn't use. I got into sales right after college because I didn't want to get into finance. And then, you know, 16 years later, I get into radio, which has nothing to do with finance. And I say that because I'm looking at this graphic that Figgy had last week on their show. And it makes me think of that because it's the most unique course offered at every Texas FBS school, mm-hmm. which tells me that every football player at each of these schools is probably taking these courses. I think that
that
feels like the implication.
Just because it's unique that
you
it must be
me.
Easy?
You
is
heard,
that what you're saying?
Well, maybe.
And then the other implication being that all of us football players are dumb?
Yeah, pretty much. No,
it's, I get it.
You're looking at the same graphic I am. And I remember going through this with Figgy before their show. I'm like, God, these are some interesting courses. And my school where I went to had courses like this too. I just never took them. Like they had a course on dreams. Dreams are super intriguing to me.
Yeah.
And I never took it. And I want to go back and take
it. You wonder why. Why didn't I take that dream?
Yeah, why didn't I take that class? Why didn't I take that class?
And now my dreams have been so thoroughly dashed against the rocks.
Yes.
Maybe it could have helped me a little bit. You go.
No.
That's what the last 6 weeks are all about. Your dreams inevitably being dashed.
Yeah. There's a few interesting, like Rice has understanding the U.S. through baseball. Which is interesting.
That is interesting. Yep.
Tech UT arguing the end of the world. I don't know if I feel like doing that, arguing the end of the world.
Yeah, you know what? I'd have to know whether that's like, is that a theology thing? Is it an environmental thing? Is it nuclear? I have no idea what they're, I'd have to know what context the end of the, which end of which world are they talking about?
This is North Texas. Science, skepticism, and weird behavior.
I'd find that interesting.
Yeah, you brought that up during the break. Yeah.
That titillates me.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, U of H, you Cougs out there. There's a course on beer appreciation. That doesn't even sound real to me.
It doesn't, though?
Beer.
I've probably learned all the different, the hoppiness of beer
Maybe.
And whatnot all that. Yeah.
Maybe. I mean,
would you rather take a course? I guarantee you the beer appreciation students are a lot more fun than the wine appreciation students.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Unless they're like in a culinary program or something.
Aggies have a course called Texas Barbecue.
That's one. I thought about that, and I almost wonder. I don't know enough about barbecue to, you know, I'm not one of these guys that claims on Twitter to be the expert in all things barbecue. So I don't know if I would want to zero in on Texas barbecue before getting a more broad appreciation for things, you know? Don't make me choose whether I'm a Presbyterian or a Baptist before I just peruse the book itself.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. I think this is Texas State. This might be the one that I would take because I think I'd learn the most in this one. Like this is truly something that I'm not an expert in any of this, so it intrigues me. From Jay-Z to Kendrick Lamar, politics, power, and identity in hip-hop lit, which I might be short for literature, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Oh, hip-hop lit. Yeah, that's a, no, I don't. Yeah, I would think it was literature.
Yeah, that's, well, they're having a hard time fitting all the words in the box right there. So I'm
that would be a, no, yeah, that would be a really good one.
That's near the top of my
list. Just trying to see things through a different perspective and everything. Yes. See where your blind spots are and all that. Yeah, yeah. But a little bit, and then you get more references too.
Mm-hmm.
You'd understand more of, you know, just like same as not getting references about The Office because you haven't watched The Office.
That's right.
It's a lot of references I don't get from hip hop and everything because I haven't been thoroughly soaked in it.
I would take a course in The Office where we just watch The Office for the entire semester. They have courses like there's a college that has a course in The Sopranos, which would be amazing.
I'd most like podcasting at Sam Houston. I think I'd like to take that. The only thing I would worry about is that two things could happen. At one end of the spectrum, it might be me like feeling like I'm a know-it-all or something, mm-hmm. where in actuality, a lot of these young kids know a lot more about podcasting than I do. Or the other side of it would be that the teacher would be just asking me questions all the time or making fun of me for being a relic and not understanding the way things are done these days.
Yeah,
I always have to explain to these people. They'll be like, yeah. Yeah, Seth, yeah, podcasting is where it's at. Yeah, I was like, yeah, we podcast. Like, it's not, yeah, we stream. It's all, you guys are making more of this than you need to.
Mm-hmm.
It's like sports radio is lucky in that it's the only, it's really of all the old media or traditional media types that immediately transfers into all the new stuff so easily.
Yep.
It's just, we've been podcasting for years or doing the same format. We just do it 12 times in a show. We do 12 podcasts a show.
That's right.
But I'm sure there's a boatload of stuff that I'm missing out on. I don't trust that whoever's teaching the podcasting class is any more clued in than this Gen Xer.
Yeah.
I feel like I try to learn a lot about social media from 20-year-olds. I feel like those guys have their finger on the pulse a lot better than I do.
Well, there's like a 50% chance whoever's teaching that podcasting course probably failed with their podcast. You know, like,
yeah,
it's like when you got, you know, people that's, you know, they had a business that failed, and then so they go teach. They teach a business course.
Understanding the U.S. through baseball would be really interesting, just because baseball used to be such so ingrained in
fabric, man.
Society at large. And it was really the only big time sport for a long time, that at least endured for decades as the big time sport.
That filled up stadiums and was the center of a lot of what went on socially. In big cities. Text message, Texas State has a surviving a zombie apocalypse class, which I think Seth would like. Texas Tech on this graphic has the zombie in media and popular culture. Are you a zombie guy?
No, not a zombie guy. I like all the themes that come up with zombie movies.
Yeah.
You know, you got to make... when you have to kill the person that used to be your relative.
A lot of hard decisions. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of... It boils everything down to the raw nerve of human existence. I like that. But it's not like I'm scared of zombies or anything. I do like, you know what I've realized over time, and maybe this course would touch on it a little bit. I think I'm becoming a little bit of a prepper, but not because I'm really worried about it, but I just like the challenge of it. Like, okay, yeah, what would I do if all of a sudden, society just completely broke down and we were living in an anarchistic environment. Like, what kind of weapons do I need? What kind of supplies? What kind of a bunker do I need? I like the challenge of it.
How much bottled water do you own currently?
Isn't
that a staple of getting prepared for the apocalypse?
In our country property, I've got a well.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, if somehow the water table gets soiled, I need to get either a purification system or something.
Question. How much toilet paper do you keep on hand?
Well, you can do it. If you run out of toilet paper, you find ways. You make do, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Maybe I'm being a little soft. Like, nope.
Yeah.
I only want toilet paper down there. The one, okay, what do you think this is? SMU has how to build a time machine. Obviously, at the end of that semester, you don't have a time machine because a time machine doesn't exist.
You're in your negative attitude.
What do you think that course is?
You know what? I think it's probably something about relativity or something.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's more, it's not really a unique course. It's a spin on, let's see. Let's see. The how to build a time machine isn't what I had hoped for. It's the impact of technological change on archaeology and more broadly on how modern people view the distant past.
Okay. You know what? That's interesting to me. I've grown more and more interested in history in the past. Now, this sounds like it's way in the past, but that sounds intriguing to me. Okay. I won't have a time machine at the end of it, but I can deal with that.
I do. You know what's hard for, I think, for us to grasp as far as not the distant past, but I think even when people think wistfully of the 1950s or what have you, I don't think they realize just how much consumerism is the filter that we look through things at. And like pre-1950s, it was, I think, by and large, for one, there wasn't necessarily as vast a difference between most classes of people, like economically, or at least, you know. But then obviously you have the whole, there's a lot that was different. But like even people who are well-to-do, I don't think were as materialistic as the average U.S. citizen is these days. And it's hard to, I try to think about that when you go back and look at things through the lens of somebody who's living in the 1800s or something. We really don't realize just how materialistic we are.
Yes. I'm going with Texas State. Go Bobcats. From Jay-Z to Kendrick Lamar, politics, power, and identity in hip-hop literature. I'm going with that course. I feel like that's the one I can learn the most in. That's what I'm going with.
Do it.
Sounds like
take it online. Put your money where your mouth is, dude. You can get in-state tuition.
Do you think I can? Oh, maybe I will. Maybe I will. It's a good call. Think I can get in? Think I'll get admitted to Texas State? Will they want my SAT
if they
scores?
Offer it online, a lot of the online classes, you don't have to be a matriculated student.
All
right, let's do that. You and I will take an online class in something.
Okay.
Let's find something at a Texas State school and take an online class and see who gets a better grade.
I like that. I am bookmarking this tweet right now. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you as we roll on a Tuesday. Will Anderson Jr. was on the Greenlight podcast with Chris Long. This was out, I believe they spoke in Detroit because Will had just gotten off the practice field for the joint practice with the Lions. Talked about Ariante Ursery. What is Will Anderson's impression right now of the Texans offensive line? And what did they learn from last season? That is coming up next.